This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Discover Lafayette is recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions, a technology company located in the Light Center in Lafayette. Raider offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work? We understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. Camille Pavi Claiborne is our guest today. She is president and CEO of Cabell Inc., a consulting and leadership training company providing executive coaching. Camille was also a nurse for more than 40 years, working in nursing administration and overseeing the care and comfort of the sick and dying. After she retired from nursing, she volunteered for hospice and witnessed firsthand what her patients went through at the end of their journey on earth. The experience led her to write a book called Dying in God's Hands in 2009. In 2012, after caring for her own parents at their end stages of life, she wrote Purses and Shoes for Sale, The Joys and Challenges of Caring for Elder Parents. The book provides precious guidance on dealing with the challenges of aging. Camille also turned to making pottery after taking a continuing education class at UL Lafayette. She is a master craftsman affiliated with the Louisiana Crafts Guild, selling her creations. Camille, I've looked forward to this and on so many levels, talking about your personal life, your professional life, and what led you to put pen to paper to capture your thoughts. So welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you, Jan. It's great to be here.
And I could have let you talk about yourself like that, but I like to get in the early intro so that I can take that burden off you and just let you talk. But where would you like to start? Do you want to talk about nursing, you know, your young professional life? And
that's probably where it all began. Being a nurse for 40 years, and I had experiences early in my nursing career where, as a critical care nurse, I was with a patient that died alone. It was a tragic death, and came to the emergency room and had surgery and ultimately passed away after a couple of days. But his family was located in another part of the country, and by the time they got there, he had passed away, except for those of us that were with him. And I remember tucking that away in the back of my brain, thinking, you know, no one should ever die alone. And but moved on, because that's what critical care nurses do.
Right.
You wake up, shake yourself off, and get going. So over the years, I've thought often about dying and really didn't want to dive into that because it's a difficult subject. And also, I just love hospital work. So my in-laws and my mother and father also died with Hospice of Acadiana, which was the first hospice in this area. And so I decided to volunteer for Hospice of Acadiana and was drawn to that team effort of no one dies alone and the quality of life that hospice concepts try and envision. So I decided to study it while I went to graduate school and actually interview patients on their experience of dying and if they planned for it or not, if they believed that they were transitioning to another life. And so I spent 4 years interviewing hospice patients from all over Acadiana on that those questions.
They were willing to speak candidly. Do you feel that they opened up?
They were given the option. No one was forced to get interviewed. So after I got approved by the ethics board to do the study, we offered it to any Hospice of Acadiana patient. And there wasn't enough hours in the day to interview all the people that did want to be interviewed.
Oh, that's so beautiful, though, because it may have been cathartic for them. I'm sure.
Well, in some ways, I was probably the person that scripted their story, because some were actually days or weeks away from dying. We didn't know it at the time, but their story had not been scripted. So once I did complete that work and graduate, that was real important to finish that. Graduate, I felt because it was a calling to tell their stories, because they had given so much to me, I decided to put it in a book format where they're, and that's the first book that I wrote, was Dying in God's Hands. And so it has about their stories, it has about the research and the research that showed those people that were planning a spiritual transition, meaning they believed in afterlife, they believed in heaven, and they believed in eternal peace. They had a better experience during their dying process than those that thought it was the end. It was a very black and dark. So it ended up a wonderful research project, but more importantly, it changed my life.
That's what I was thinking. And I was curious, dying in God's hands, not everybody did believe that. And I haven't had the opportunity to read the entire book, but I can't imagine what it would be like not to think that there would be a better, you know, like this isn't the end, because then you'd have so many deep regrets if you felt
that. When I was trying to find what do I say as far as what the title of the book should be, and it was my father, Dr. Pavi. He's a retired pediatrician. Mm-hmm. He's deceased now. He died last October. But he said, you should have the book Be Dying in God's Hands. There's no place else to be. And so I said, that's a great idea. So anyway, that's how it came to be.
I've read other books capturing, I guess, some of the essence of, it seemed like there were five main things people might think about. And we hadn't discussed this before the interview, but at the end of our lives, there's probably a lot more regret for what we didn't do than maybe what we did. Mm-hmm. Would you have recurring themes that came up? Would people say similar things, you know, that they look back on their life?
Actually, the research was a thematic analysis. So once I recorded all the interviews, I went back to look at themes of what they said. And that's what the thematic analysis is called, from a research standpoint. And was able to put those also in the book. And it is about leaving a legacy. They didn't care or remember about the committee meetings they missed or other things. It was about relationships and legacy and family and the things that sometimes people might say are the softer values of professional life, but they're really the most important values of a professional life. So I did do a theme analysis, and it was just amazing.
Was there like a spreadsheet where you'd say,
actually the whole
made
room
up with my mother,
the whole room had papers all over it. So when you walked in, you could see, that's the theme about relationships, and that's the theme about families, because I had them on big poster boards. Back then it was in the 90s. So the computer,
but
software wasn't exactly available that I wanted related to thematic analysis. There's much better software now than there was then. So
were people scared?
Oh yeah. That I think that's a natural human response, because the unknown is always a fear. And I believe that those people that were brave enough to tell their story, what I wanted was for the conversation to be more common. I think sometimes people think that if they don't talk about dying, no one's going to die.
Yeah.
Or they think, you know, I don't need to talk about that. Well, the one thing we all have in common is death, whether we want to talk about it or not. And so I found as I interviewed people, when I told them I'm talking to people that are dying, I was really inspired by them. They would go, oh, good for you. My husband would say, you sure did clean out that alumni event.
Yeah,
you know,
everybody cleared out.
Yeah, exactly.
Were they were just nervous, maybe.
I think it's a natural human response. It's natural. It's a difficult subject to talk about.
Yeah.
I think it's better that we're now teaching it in nursing and medical schools so that we can approach it better.
To know what to say or not say.
Yeah. And I think the fact that there's more hospices in the world, that hospice care is surrounding people with education, that we're better.
Right.
You know, but the world is still, it's a tough subject.
Yeah.
Because it's not every death is peaceful, and not every death makes sense. And some are very tragic, and some are unexpected.
That's what I was thinking about, yeah. The unexpected. You know, if you're in hospice, it's bad news, good news. It's bad news that you're dying, but the good news is you have some time, at least, mm-hmm. even if it's a few days, to make that call, apologize, tell somebody you love them. But people that die unexpectedly and probably haven't cleaned out the closets and left things in order, that's got to be a lot to deal with for the family members that are left behind. I don't know if that was even discussed in the book, if it's the dying patient you were focused on or the larger family that's left with the aftermath. You know, it's just as hard.
This research was focused on the patient. But there's a triangle, the patient, the family, and then the caregivers, which could be the family coupled with a physician or a mm-hmm. nurse or a team. I recently, for the second book, interviewed the families. And then the third part of the triangle would be to interview, because I think that it is a triangle mm-hmm. of relationships and feelings and emotions and knowledge that goes into the dying process. It's not, but my focus initially was to find out what the patient was feeling, because mm-hmm. I really was curious about that.
Yeah.
And now I know more about the caregiver, and I've been a nurse, so I know what it feels like, but I really want to spend time with nurses mm-hmm. and interview them too.
Yeah. Nurses have been important to my family. And I know a personal story when my mother passed away, we were at Our Lady of Lourdes. I know you were with General for your career.
I worked at Lourdes too.
Both, so, right? Yeah. I mean, I can't say enough about our local hospitals and the, mm-hmm. the people that take care of our families. But Mom was dying. We were from Baton Rouge and I'd moved her here. And the nurses that helped us, it gave me great peace. But it's funny, I didn't realize how the nurses are impacted. And a few years later, I was using a local accountant, and he shared with me that his wife had been the nurse for our family when my mother was dying. And it was just a very trying time for me. And I had small children, and I was older, and just looking at life. Like, you just look at yourself when you see somebody dying. And I was with her when she passed away. And he said, my wife told me about your family and about you. And I was shocked that somebody would remember, because I just remembered it being, it was a confusing time. Yeah. And they were there for us. The nurses at Lourdes really got me through it, because I'd had a do not resuscitate, and the ambulance mm-hmm. drivers had put something mm-hmm. down her throat, and she'd been in a coma for a few months. And I didn't want that, and she didn't want that, but we had to go through a lot mm-hmm. to have that tube removed. And I remember thinking, when do you learn how to do all this? Like, mm-hmm. you just have to go with your gut and your faith. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really excited to have you here talking about that, because the caregivers are what get families through those trying times.
Yeah.
Because they didn't freak out, you know. I probably would freak out if I was a nurse having to deal with someone.
No, I love being a nurse. I loved being around nurses.
It's so peaceful.
Yeah. We probably get more back than we give mm-hmm. because of the people that we meet. And they are forever embedded in our hearts, whether they're tough patients or quiet patients. Doesn't matter. You remember them.
It's a rich fabric. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a few years later, after you wrote Dying in God's Hands, you were taking care of your parents, if I understand your mm-hmm. your life journey. Mm-hmm. And your dad, you were saying, had Alzheimer's.
Correct.
I don't know the story of your mother, but can you talk about that some and what led you
Absolutely.
To write your second book?
My mom and dad lived to be the rich ages of mom was almost 90 when she died, and my dad was almost 95. But in their mid to late 80s, they were challenged to kind of navigate some of the changes that they were going mm-hmm. through, and so we began to help them as children, their children.
They were losing their independence.
Yeah,
mobility,
you know, maybe take them for rides places. Don't drive on I-10 anymore. Mm-hmm. Maybe not get on the highway. Geez, that's a busy time of the day. Maybe I could catch a ride for that, or you know. So there was little things, and then I'm tired of cooking, and you know, and so let's bring in some meals. And so there were little gentle things that they needed help up to the point of dad dying last October, where he was completely dependent on needing help with feeding or bathing and hygiene mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. My mom died from a lung problem, so she had all her wits about her until the day before she died. So that was wonderful that she mm-hmm. could communicate with us, as opposed to sometimes dementia, Alzheimer's causes a challenge. But what happened, Jan, was I journal just about every day.
You always had? Were you a
always.
Capturing your thoughts.
It's part of my prayer and meditation, just to kind of write my thoughts. I mean, some thoughts may be what I need to do for the day. Some thoughts could be something really profound, mm-hmm. or a song that I want to write, or, you know, it just depends. But I journal everything, so I kind of clear my mind for the day and offer what's in my mind to God to just help me work it out and get busy with what I committed to do, what service I need to do for the day. So I was journaling it, and I started looking back, and I thought, wow, I wonder if there's kids around taking care of their parents that are, well, there must be a bunch of kids taking their care of their parents that aren't nurses, that don't know the risk of falling, mm-hmm. or do they know that these five medications cause this, or I wonder if they know what a DNR is, or I wonder if they know what's the difference between assisted living and nursing home, mm-hmm. and if they know the difference between skilled care and hospice care, or
and they learn the hard way.
Yeah. And then I go, do they even realize that assisted living mm-hmm. or a nursing home could be anywhere from $3,800 to $8,000 a month? Or do they know that sitters cost, if they keep them at home, around the clock, $120,000? Does anybody know that? You know, and I started writing all these things down mm-hmm. and then reading about each one of them. And at some point, I thought I probably should put this in a way that could be a resource guide for other family members that are taking care of elder parents, mm-hmm. particularly from a safety standpoint, understanding medications and falls and hospitalizations and dementia mm-hmm. and all the key signs that go with that. So my mom, I was driving her to shop one day, and she and Dad had talked about obituaries, and so she said, come get me. And they always read obituaries every morning. They told us who died. I mean, they opened up the Advocate and the Daily Advertiser, read everybody that died and told mm-hmm. us what funerals they needed to go to. And so she had gotten frustrated with Dad because he was writing his own obituary because he had found something that was disturbing in somebody's obituary. So decided he would just write his own. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I thought she was upset about it. I'm driving on Bassett Caffrey and she's talking, and She says, I'm not upset about it. I just think it needs to be a little bit more simple than your dad's making it be. His mm-hmm. is kind of long, but I know he's
he's done a lot.
Yeah, he's done a lot, and he's a pediatrician. Yeah. So I said, well, what do you want yours to say? She says, Anna Mae Pavey, she died, purses and shoes for sale.
Oh, I love that.
And I said, that's it? Gosh. She says, yes, you and your sisters already took the hats. That was it. So,
and that does kind of sum it all up,
She said, there's nothing else to say. She said, and she was German by nature. And she said,
I love that.
I died. So sell everything, move on. I had a great life.
Purses
I'm going where
shoes.
I plan to go. And she just had a sense of, and Dad had a sense of, you're born, you live, you die. Mm-hmm. And they both did. They both were quite frank about it. So it stayed in my mind for years.
Did you keep on driving? I mean,
I just kept on driving.
Stop the car.
Like, this is hilarious, But I wrote it down in my journal and packed it away. It wasn't until years later mm-hmm. that I go, well, she's right.
Yeah.
There's just, you got to learn all these facts.
A lot of stuff we carry.
You got to grow old. Mm-hmm. Well, you hope to grow old. Some people don't get that chance. You hope to figure it all out. You hope to have help. Mm-hmm. You hope to have the finances. I mean, there's all kinds of things that go into getting old. It's just not and what I learned is the definition of an older adult is 65 or older. Well, that's me. I'm getting close, but I think there's a lot of difference between a 65 year old and a 75 year old and an 85 year old and a 95 year old and a 105 year old. And I was doing a research project on centenarians, which are people over 100, so I was listening to their stories. So that's how that came to be. And
I
try and go to centers, whether it's assisted living or churches or wherever mm-hmm. I can go to help people kind of dive into some of this because it's too much at one time. It's overwhelming.
You talk with the children too, like the children of the elderly parents.
Yeah, to talk about it. You know, it's okay to talk about it. Yeah, and the book has a lot of humor in it because, you know, it's you have to keep your sense of humor. You know, I mean, things do start to fall apart. You know, so it's the law of gravity. You know, our bodies do start to fall apart.
And there's so many things, like you said, it's not just where do you live or what do you carry with you? You know, what do you keep? But it's all the details about the care and the mobility. And I know I've lived it. Both my parents are deceased, Camille, and they both died relatively young. In their late 60s, mom was in her early 70s. Well, thank you for saying that. They had a lot of health problems. They didn't take care of themselves, and they didn't really have many material resources. And I was left. I was the one that kind of took care of things. And I did a garage sale talking about the stuff. There weren't many shoes or purses for sale. You know, we got less than $500 for all the stuff. And it made me look at life and the stuff I have and going, it doesn't matter how much you have. It's all stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not going with you. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't take care of your business, your children are left having to. Mm-hmm. Not just driving you to the doctor, but actually going through your things and making decisions about old greeting cards and the old coffee pot and all the things that nobody thinks about and nobody wants to. So your mom inspired you.
She did.
Was she always somebody
they
for you?
Both were. I think I was one of the lucky and blessed children that actually had parents that had a plan. So they had an outlined plan of their wishes and their desires.
Their funerals even?
They had their funeral planned out, the songs they wanted.
Oh, that's so nice.
Where they wanted to be buried.
Because when people die, it's so emotional.
You just
don't know really where to turn or what to do.
You're correct. And it's hard to make those decisions sometimes. And they had their long-term care insurance and their financials outlined. So we understood what they could spend on assisted living and what they wanted to spend. And that's a lot of angst sometimes in families if you don't know.
Right.
What somebody wants.
Right.
So
right.
That's what I encourage people, talk about it.
So in your book, again, I want to say it's called Purses and Shoes for Sale, The Joys and Challenges of Caring for Elder Parents. I know you've blogged and written things, but it sounds like that's a good resource for people, for all of us even, like not just the children taking care of the parents, but us, just to look at what we need to do and maybe plan ahead, huh?
Well, a lot of my friends give it to their kids as a gift. The first section is kind of what happened in mom and dad's story, and then the second section is a question and answer. We had about 250 questions and answers that we brought it down to probably about 30, but it could be how do I apply for veterans benefits, or what's the difference between Medicaid and Medicare, what's Part B, what's Part C? You know, it's a navigational
challenge. And with changing health care and everything, it's very important.
And then the third section is resources, websites they can go to, patients' bill of rights, how we cleared out a family home that they lived in 40 years, what we did. We put the outline in there. So there's just a lot of tips. And not every person will need that same tip that we did, but they'll find.
Yeah. Exactly. Think about other things. So, so I have a question. I want to talk about what you do in executive coaching and all. Thinking about death, does it make you think about life every day, about this moment?
Absolutely. I mean, the most important thing about death is that we are going to die. So let's enjoy the day in the present moment. No matter whether we have a diagnosis or not, because life is short.
It is very short.
And so I think the what I learned in dealing with elder people and also with dying patients is that priorities, some things that I might have been interested in, or I shouldn't say interested, maybe I worried about.
Focused on.
Yeah, or focused on 20 years ago.
Out the window.
Out the window.
Yeah.
You know, so I think we all should have that kind of reflection. And I think we do get it when people die. I think we also get it when friends die,
And I think the aging process, you learn to let go of the superficial because it's going anyway.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not important, but you have to come to that on your own. It's not something someone can tell you.
Correct.
Don't worry about what you look like. Don't worry about you didn't get the job because it, in the moment, I mean, you know, maybe for younger people, it is everything.
And it's hard to focus on that because you go, okay, today's Saturday. Do I clean out my stuff or go to the UL baseball game?
Yeah.
Baseball game sounds like a good idea. The weather's nice, you know. So it's not easy to do some of the things that we need to do to plan ahead.
Yeah. Right. So I guess you're focused now on your training company. And I don't know much about Emergenetics. I was reading the website and looking at that. You're trained in Emergenetics.
I'm a certified trainer in Emergenetics.
What is that?
It's Emergenetics is an international company founded in Denver, but one of the vice presidents in Baton Rouge who I work with. And it's helping people understand their thinking and behaving attributes and their preferences so that we can help them build teams in the workplace so they understand that we all have unique values that we bring to the workplace and they're all different. And differences help us make things better. Instead of looking at us all trying to think one way, let's look at how people think differently. And so it's about helping the individual themselves appreciate who they are and love who they are. It's a nature and a nurture. You were born one way and you also were, you learned one way. And then we put that into the workplace by helping all the people realize differences are great.
And respect
the differences. And respect the differences. Because we all behave and think in a different way.
Right.
So, and that's, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it's so fun. Yeah.
So that's not necessarily a faith-based organization. It's
correct.
Based on research and
realities. Based on neuroscience.
People.
Correct.
But faith has driven your work.
Yes. From day one. Yeah. I believe I was called to do this work.
That's what you were telling me.
Yes. I was called to do the work. I'm having a good conversation with God right now. Whether I'm called to do a book on Alzheimer's, it's quite fearful to write that process because it's a very sad disease.
It's very sad.
Yeah,
we've had that in my family also.
Yes,
you lose the person, the body's there, and it's an angry time for a lot of people, and then they slip away.
But the experience is one that people are having more of, and I want to reach out and help.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I'd love to read that.
We'll
see.
We'll see. Yeah. My dad always said, why don't you write something a little bit more positive than old people, Alzheimer's and death? Couldn't you think of something that could be a bestseller? You know,
well,
but maybe they will be bestsellers one day.
Yeah.
You never know. So
maybe
we'll
about
see.
Maintaining a sense of humor
as
you age and go through all these things.
That's a good idea.
I know you're also a master craftsman, and when we were talking, I brought something that I read online that you talked about. I know Isaiah 64:8 is very important to you, and I'm just going to read from the King James Version. But now, O Lord, thou art our Father. We are the clay, and thou art a potter, and we are all the work of thy hand. And your artist statement is, God is the potter, and we are the clay. I had stumbled upon that by accident. I know it wasn't an accident. About 14 years ago when I went back to work, confused, you know, middle age, going back to work, trying to build a law practice again with small children. And I didn't even realize that the pottery I was looking at was based on this. God is the potter and we're the clay. And it gave me great comfort, and I was so happy to see that that guides you too, because none of this is by accident. I think God, you know, he's the potter, and he molds us if we listen, and that's hard for me. I mean, it's hard for me to really day-to-day go back and just say, God, what do you want me to do today?
Yeah.
What is the design for my life? Because I want to kind of take charge and, you know, like the bull in the china shop, and sometimes things get broken. If I don't stop and listen. And I was really, just felt such a connection with you, Camille. But can you talk about clay and being a potter and what it's like to be silent and creating?
It's a wonderful experience. I started it just because I was interested in it.
Just like a class? You just thought, let me see if I can do this?
Yeah, it was a nighttime class, and I thought it'd be a stress reliever. I was working, you know, 50 or 60 hours a week as vice president of nursing, and it was a busy job. I loved it. But it was stressful. And so I took the class, and it was a lot of fun. And then I started studying God as a potter. And really with life transitions of work, or if you're given a terminal illness, or if you're aging, you know, the form that you thought you were going to live is going to change. And I kind of look at that as a pot that may get cracked and needs to be re-wet and rethrown, or needs to be used in a different format. And, you know, to mold something, the mold changes with the amount of pressure put on it, or it changes if there's a crack and you have to add another piece. And so I think any life transition, and I just so happen to be studying those two, there's plenty. Losing a sibling, changing a job, moving to another city, losing weight, developing a new habit. Those are all really places we need to give up sometimes the old piece of clay and be open to God's mercy and love to help us form a new form that we can be of service to Him and other people. So I try and use that in my daily life. Like that, you know, Camille was, you know, doing such and such. I never thought I'd write a book. I never thought I was going to study dying patients. I never thought I'd have so much fun taking care of elder people. You know, I've always liked old people, but I really love old people because they have no filters whatsoever.
That is true.
But I, you know, and I think they make life so interesting because they don't worry about much.
Well, it's full circle back to childhood. It's just full circle.
So it sitting in the pottery shop, I never know what's going to come off the wheel.
Well, exactly. I mean, I'm just trying to picture. I'm sure there's a lot of mishaps, and then
but I pray a lot, you know, and that's where I find peace and just praying for others and knowing sometimes I can serve them with my hands, and sometimes I can just pray for them, but God ultimately has us all in His hands. So if we really surrender like a piece of clay, He'll form us the way that we were meant to be.
Yeah, it's so beautiful.
Yeah, thanks.
It just all goes together.
Come out to the shop. I would love for you to come out there. You could throw a piece of mud and get your hands dirty.
I'm a coffee girl, so I'd love to make my new Jan mug.
And yeah.
I don't even know what I would call you for first. You know, how to write a book, executive life coaching through your, you know, your business. I mean,
I do a variety of things just because I enjoy variety, and also it just helps me know where God wants me to serve, and then I can take care of all my volunteer work and old people in between. So it's a lot of fun.
We've been sitting here, as I mentioned earlier, with Jason Sikora, and you and Jason are both artists, and you were talking about that too. You play piano and a couple of other instruments, and I know Jason, first of all, listens to the podcast and will have questions that I haven't even thought to ask. But I wanted to pull you in, Jason, and see if there were a couple of things you'd like to ask Camille.
Well, yeah. First of all, thank you for being here.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
For those aspiring nurses listening to this podcast, what was the best part about being a nurse?
Well, I still am a nurse.
Okay.
So I'll just have to say
that. So what is the best part about being a nurse?
Yes, I'm still actively licensed as an advanced practitioner. The best part of being a nurse is connecting with the human spirit of another person and being able to serve them, you know. So the spirits of people, I find them so fascinating. And sometimes it takes a little bit longer to get to know somebody than another. But the spirit is always just so amazing, you know, once you can crack through or break through or let them trust you and get that going. It's pretty cool.
Nice. Moving on to the writing a book, I know there's a lot of aspects of it, you know, writing it and getting it published. And what was the hardest part of writing a book?
I guess the hardest part was finding the right publisher and finding somebody that that was passionate about the same subject you want to be. I was lucky enough to find the publisher right here in town, Trent Andrews with Acadian House Publishing, that does a lot of human interest and human socially valuable stories and works. And so it was just once I found because I really didn't know where to go. A lot of people say, should I self-publish? Is there anybody interested in my work? Is it worth anything? Once you get past those and go, there's a connection that someone wants to help you accomplish it, that's really when it starts moving, you know, because they know how to move it through the steps.
Yeah, I figured it was more the technical side, not the writing side. It's actually, you have the book now, now what do you do with it?
Well, I needed plenty of editorial help, but yes, you're correct. It's in your heart, so you know you got to get it out.
Yeah.
But there's plenty of people out there that want to help you. Mm-hmm. If you have a good story, you should search out for the right person, because there's plenty of people that want to hear the truth.
Yeah. Then my final question was, your mom's obituary, did she get her wish on, you know, those two lines?
Yeah. Well, dad was still alive, and we did a formal.
Okay.
Yeah, we did. So we did a formal obituary, and certainly wanted to follow that format him.
Did it say purses and shoes for sale?
No. We ended up putting it in the book instead.
Okay.
Yeah. Not the headstone. Huh?
There was a headstone, though, that I recently saw at St. I visit cemeteries around this area because I find them so fascinating.
They really
to see
are
what people
yeah.
put as their epitaph. Mm-hmm. And there was one that a friend of mine called me and said, you got to see this one. And it said, I told you I was sick.
Oh,
so people in their humor write the coolest epitaphs. So I always tell people, I said, take a pretty walk one day and walk through a cemetery. It's interesting.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that is a thing now. I have friends that like to do that, and I didn't realize.
You're honoring those people that are
exactly.
there. Exactly. You know, so that's how you have to look at it.
It puts me at peace, because I see that no matter what I'm worried about, really it doesn't matter. You know, 100 years from now, none of that's going to matter.
There's one grave in Acadiana, and I don't know where it is, but this lady always said, you can't have my chocolate chip cookie recipe until I die. And they put it on her.
That's great.
Really?
It's the recipes on there. And I thought, that is so cool.
Right.
You know, so, yeah.
And she'll be remembered.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's great.
Excellent. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
This has been such a pleasure. Camille Pavi Claiborne is our guest today. And I want to mention the two books that she's written, Dying in God's Hands and Purses and Shoes for Sale.
That's where they can get it.
Yeah, and they can also get it from Acadian House Publishing here in Lafayette, Louisiana. You can Google these. You can actually just Google
absolutely.
Camille Pavi Claiborne, and all this comes up. And I know you might have a third book in you about Alzheimer's.
We'll
I hope
see.
You do. I hope you do pursue that. And Camille, you bring so much to our community. I'd heard about you helping businesses with executive coaching, helping people come up with direction for their life, their business, and it's been a real honor to have you here today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And I'd like to also thank you for listening to Discover Lafayette. We tape this here in Raider Solutions with Jason Sikora. You can hear this podcast and all of our podcasts on my website, discoverlafayette.net. You can also subscribe on iTunes. You can get this anywhere you get your podcast. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, I'm Jan Swift. Thank you.